Welcome to the PDH online course for Design to the Fire Alarm Code NFPA 72-2007. This is the first audio section. We'll run about 30 minutes, take a break, and come back and continue as like that till we pretty much finish the course. In this first section, we're going to go through the front matter associated with the course and the introduction, just to kind of get our bearings on what makes up a fire alarm system, and the topics we'll be discussing in more detail as the course progresses. This three-hour course discusses concepts, equipment selection, and graphic representation of typical life safety fire alarm systems for stores, churches, apartment houses, schools, institutions, and factories, except high hazard. The key principles are the basic guidelines of the Fire Alarm Code, NFPA 72. We're using the 2007 edition. By the way, as an aside, the course is very closely based upon the Fire Alarm Code. I use the Fire Alarm Code handbook to help me understand what's going on so that I can explain it to you perhaps a little better. The code itself is law to the extent that it's adopted by local municipalities and enforced that way. And this, in my experience, that's very generally the case. The handbook is not law. It's interpretive matter, but it's very highly respected. So it's one step down from the authority, but it's a very good reference. Now, your instructor is two steps down, because I try to read the code and make sense of it. I try to read the handbook and use that to make sense of the code, and then I use whatever skills I have available to apply it to real world application. If you get into a serious question, please study the code yourself. Please call your local authority having jurisdiction. At the end of the day, what the building inspector or the plans reviewer says is pretty much what we have to live with, though most municipalities, states, whatever, have an avenue for review and appeal. It stops the project. You don't get your plans approval, you can't go to bid, and obviously it costs money, plus the terrible burden of holding things up after the financing's been. I mean, there's so many reasons you don't want to go the appeals route. You want the authority having jurisdiction to be on your side. We're going to talk about normal applications and some warnings in cases that require special attention. The course does not replace an NICET certificate or a PE license. The course does not address residential fire alarms. Wait a minute, what's an NICET certificate? Well, we're going to mention that a little later. There's a website that is referenced in that section of the course. And NICET is a national organization that certifies technicians. And it's a very interesting story. This is related in one of the PDH courses. NICET is an offspring of the National Society of Professional Engineers. And as best I can tell, they weren't happy with the technicians they were encountering, so they said they'd do it better themselves. And they set up this organization that gives very serious tests and does a good job licensing technicians and tries to maintain the distance between the professional engineer and the technician. Their technician tasks, their professional engineer tasks. Unfortunately, fire alarms is a crossover. Many of the states have adopted NICET certification as adequate to design fire alarms. All states that I'm familiar with, and that's limited, but I've been doing this a while, recognize a professional engineer. And one of the rules of being a professional engineer is you're supposed to turn down assignments that you're not able to handle. And I think that's the reasoning behind it. Plus the fact that for years, professional engineers have been focusing on fire alarms. The revision to the 2007 code includes shared notification for toxic, weather, natural disaster, and terrorist hazards. Now, this absolutely blew my mind. The code, it says here shared notification. That's not the case. Toxic, chemical, weather, natural disaster, and terrorist hazards take precedence over fire alarming. Whoa! That is different. New technology has been approved, including CCTV-based systems, which are discussed in some detail. Characteristics of a smoke plume and ceiling jet are discussed to aid understanding of detector placement rules. The course includes a multiple choice quiz at the end, which is designed to enhance understanding of the course materials. At the conclusion of the course, it's our intention that the student will understand the different responsibilities of the architect and the fire alarm designer, recognize the standard abbreviation, symbols, and terminology used with fire alarms, be familiar with plan drawing representation, graphic riser diagrams, and specification of systems, be able to research NFPA 72 and contact proper local authorities to answer specific questions involved in fire alarm system design, understand the differences between hardwired and addressable systems, understand the importance of supervised operation of initiating devices, notification devices, annunciation devices, and interface relays, understand the benefits and hazards of integrating a building automation and other systems with fire alarm functions, understand the present and expected requirements of a smoke control system, understand the available features of pull stations, including single action, double action, alarming covers, and locked units, understand the available features of smoke detectors, including analog, ionization, photoelectric, smoke signature, duct detectors, and test reset stations. Understand the available features of heat detectors, including analog, fixed temperature, rate of rise, and test aids. Recognize the names and basic principles associated with specialized detectors, such as beam detectors and UV sensors. Recognize the differences among multi-sensor, multi-criteria, and combination detectors. Understand the relationship between the sprinkler system and the fire alarm. Know the rules for location of pull stations and detectors. Understand the features of notification devices, including voice, audible, and visual. Know the rules for locations and types of notification devices. Know the rules for interconnection between individual room smoke alarms and general building evacuation systems. Know the rules for combined use of voice notification and general public address. Know the requirements for installation of the fire alarm control unit, formerly the fire alarm control panel, and with remote annunciators. Know the rules for central monitoring. Be able to review a fire alarm design for obvious and subtle errors. Recognize major suppliers, and that's from their websites in the reference list. We don't actually review the suppliers. The course is intended for professional engineers, architects, and contractors. It will also be of value to persons with technical background who wish to extend their knowledge into new realms. It does not replace a NICET certificate or a PE license. Some topics are presented only in brief reference. Correct technical terms are used so that an internet search will produce many sources for further information. The difference between the audio version of this and the written version, first let's say how they're the same. I read all the words in the thing. I mean, yeah, it's just an oral presentation of what's written. There is no intentional new material added. Certainly, whatever quiz at the end of it is not based on the commentary asides that I make in it. I think the oral version is a little more fun, and it is nice for people who respond better to oral presentation than they do to written presentation. But as I say, it's basically just reading the course here. But I always worry when I'm writing these things. I try to craft the sentences so they actually speak and make sense. And I don't mind the thought that somebody might have to stop and reread it. But that's hard to do when you're doing an audio version. Well, I guess maybe you could stop it and back it up. But if I may, I will stop occasionally and put in asides of what's going on here. When I say something, I mean maybe just a little more than it says. When I said this, and I said it twice about not replacing a NICET certificate or a PE license, what do I mean? I tried to do a good job on this course, but the course is not intended as a how-to manual. So a fellow who has never thought about fire alarms comes in and you give him 27 pages of my writing and he designs his first fire alarm system. I think it's valuable. You could give him this and he comes in and talks to people the next day and he gets some guidance and goes ahead. And I think it would work very well in that regard. Matter of fact, that's where it came from. I was getting new electrical engineers fresh out of college, and we needed them to do firearms. We had too many schools we were doing at the same time, and we had to get them out on time, and somebody else had to do the firearms, not me. So I put together the guidelines, and I walk the people through it, and I make sure they understand these concepts. And then we talk about the result and how maybe they've interpreted things incorrectly or they missed an important section of the code. But this is one of the components for designing fire alarm systems. It's not standalone. There are so many things that aren't covered. If I were to offer a standalone function, I'd say read the code, because as I mentioned a moment ago, the code is the real authority. Everything else is derivative. Fire alarm systems are life safety systems. It's of crucial importance that the building owner, lead design persons, detailed design persons, suppliers, installers, and maintenance persons know the right way to do the job. Everyone involved need not be an expert, but everyone must know the basic rules. A person who studies this material closely will be able to competently review a proposed fire alarm design. He will be able to create a reasonable scheme to be detailed into a complete fire alarm design. Further work by the detail designer will be required to perform the required battery sizing, voltage drop calculations, circuit loadings, and select particular device part numbers. These tasks are not addressed in this course. Fire alarms save people's lives. They're required by the state building codes in almost all facilities. Design of fire alarms done by installing contractors, vendors, NYSET technicians, and professional engineers. This 3-hour online course discusses rules for design and graphic representation. The course will spend considerable time discussing available smoke and heat detectors. First, we'll look at an overall system and features of each component that are necessary to provide reliable notification after the detector does its job. We'll spend some time on standalone smoke detectors, small hardwired systems, and interconnecting between standalone residential detectors and building evacuation systems. Our main focus, however, will be large systems, with schools used in many examples. The principles apply directly to stores, factories, institutions, apartments, and multifamily dwellings. Exceptions associated with the different occupancies will be noted. Of special interest are the interconnection between the fire alarm system and the sprinkler system, between the fire alarm system and the elevator, and between the fire alarm system and the HVAC system. Underlying concepts and examples will be presented. A special rule which is not well understood is that any fire alarm system must comply with NFPA 72. You cannot hook up a smoke detector to a plant SCADA system. If you want fire alarm notification, you must use UL-approved devices throughout the system. A SCADA system is not a UL-approved life safety system. People keep trying to convince themselves that property protection does not require an NFPA system, and that is incorrect. The law says it does. Wait a minute. He kept saying SCADA. What in the world is SCADA? Why don't we have a glossary? Why aren't these things described? Well, a lot of people already know what SCADA is. Supervisory control and data acquisition. I see them in utilities. Where else do you see them? They don't use that word for automatic control other places. Utilities, and I think we called it SCADA when I worked for the oil company also. Supervisory control and data acquisition. What that means is a computer screen that watches how the whole plant works. The concept of SCADA is that there's a local controller. If you go out to the pump building, there is a box
that measures, well, uses a sensor to measure the level in the tank and turns on and off the pumps when needed. The supervisory control gets an alarm if the local box thinks there's a problem and can go in and force things. Like sometimes you want to pump down the tank so you can do maintenance on it. So you force the pump on even though you're below the normal stop point. So that's what supervisory control does. Now, what does this have to do with fire alarms? For a long time, I did a lot of water plants. I was doing freshwater plants. Now I seem to be doing more wastewater plants. But when I was doing freshwater plants, we were always putting in a SCADA system because these were 20 and 30-year-old plants that had just a little bit of automation, and they really wanted a central control room. Well, they didn't have a choice. The government mandated it. I remember at the time they were just coming out with new instruments that measured things that we couldn't even measure before, and the government wanted a monthly report on how much of it was present. So they had to have these central computer systems with the logging to make up the government reports that were required. And we were putting in SCADA systems. SCADA systems are nice. It's a real fun job. You spend a lot of money. You get to play with great toys. It's fun to design. It's fun to install. It's fun to talk to the salesman. It's fun to start up. I mean, everything about SCADA is wonderful. So they look at this and they say, let's make it a fire alarm system. Let's put a smoke detector in each of the rooms. And I think actually this came out of an American Water Works Association requirement that you have a fire alarm. Now, let's pause here. This is an aside on an aside. Can you think of anything sillier than a fire in a cement plant that handles water? I mean, all you've got are these huge cement tanks and metal pipes, and we're worrying about a fire. Now, there are areas. They have some chemical storage areas. And obviously, you've got a little office building and all that. So there's a little, just the tiniest bit of justification for a fire alarm. But along comes the government here to help you and says you've got to have a fire alarm system. Well, they don't want to dig up the ground. These water plants are huge places. They don't want to run new wires. Got all the wires they just put in for the SCADA system. It looks like a SCADA system. It picks up a physical property out in one of the pump rooms, and it comes back and tells the screen and the operator he's got a problem. Looks like SCADA functioning. Let's just include a smoke detector and call it a fire alarm, and it's a good day, and it's cheap. Well, because it's illegal, that's why not do that. If you use the words fire alarm, it has to be NFPA 72, and every piece and part of it has to be NFPA 72. Now, there are some connections between the fire alarm system and other systems, and we'll talk about that in this course. But don't add a smoke detector to a SCADA system and say, now I got a fire alarm. You don't have a fire alarm unless it has a label on it saying it's been UL tested as a fire alarm. And for us, fire alarm means life safety. There is a special case of property protection that I would rather not talk about because it is very painful to me to see people spend money and intentionally exclude life safety. I've done this. I've installed these systems where the guys say, what we've got in our warehouse is very valuable. We've got to have a fire alarm system for the warehouse. But now we don't care if the people get out or not. We're not going to put in the lights and the strobe lights and the horns and all that. We're just going to report to our central monitoring point so they can send the fire truck out. And this is legal. There are parts of the code that say you're allowed to do this. And I've bad. Let's not talk about that. We only have nominally 3 hours to talk about this. Let's talk about saving people's lives. And that's what we're looking for in this course, is life safety systems. In the front matter, we've got something called related links. And what this is web pages. I came off a Google search. There's nothing magic here. What I did was I recorded the really good ones to share with you. I'm not going to go through all of these, but I'll try to give you a flavor of what's down there. This is extra credit stuff. If fire alarms are interesting to you, this is even more interesting because this is just wonderful ancillary information associated with fire alarms. For instance, fire and arson statistics. There's a place called alarm.org that has all kinds of statistics on how many fires are reported. Now, let me share an anecdote with you, which I think will help put things into perspective. When they started advertising the new fire alarm code, this is 2007, they said, hey, you know, there's a provision in the fire alarm code that residential smoke detectors, be careful with the word, it's not residential smoke detectors, it's residential fire alarm. A fire alarm is an integrated smoke detector and alarm unit, where a smoke detector requires a fire alarm system external to it. These are residential fire alarms, are obsolete 10 years after date of manufacture and no longer comply with the code. And I read that and I said, whoa. And then they appended to that some statistics on how many fires take place. And all of these fire alarms that people have bought and installed are obsolete 10 years after date of manufacture. Not date of installation, date of manufacture. Sits on the shelf for 6 months. It's got 9.5 years left. This was scary to me. My employer bought a standalone fire alarm for each employee and sent it home with them, with the idea you put that outside the bedroom door of somebody you love. And obviously you can buy more of them. He got them for $5 each. So I bought them for him. I mean, he tasks me with it, and I did an internet search, found a guy that was selling a name brand for $5 each, and other people were $5.15. So, you know, it's not a big cost undertaking to have a compliance system in your home, but it was the statistics they were talking about. You are guaranteed to encounter a fire sometime during your life. Chances are, during the next 10 years, you will, in your family or your home, there will be a fire serious enough to either call the fire department or at least think about calling the fire department. I mean, it is a hazard out there, and the hazard is not the flames, it's the fumes. And the fumes can happen for a long time before there's a fire. The reason for the fumes and the reason for the smoke detectors is a lot of these fumes are toxic and they kill. So we want to know when there are fumes present, and we want to tell people to evacuate. Evacuate is where the safety comes from. I tried to get all the major manufacturers in the internet reference list. I see things like Firelight and Notifier and Silent Night and General Electric, Simplex. So if the question comes up, did you see the names of different people that make it? There are a lot of different people that make fire alarms. We've got contact with their websites. There's going to be a lot of reference to Simplex here. And the reason for that is, in the Midwest where I work, Simplex has about 80% of the market for the schools and the large commercial jobs like I do. Now, why is that? Well, Simplex sells good stuff, and they give us good service around here, and there's enough of it installed that the owners want to put in more of the same. They don't want to start with a new manufacturer. One of the things we're going to get into a little later is that you must have compatible equipment. It has to be tested together in order to use it together. So if you've got a Simplex panel, you can't put somebody else's smoke detector on it. You have to put a Simplex smoke detector on it. If you've got a big, expensive master panel you bought a couple years ago, you can expand it, typically very easily, but you can only expand it with the same manufacturer. So around here, we use Simplex, and we've had good experience with it. I've talked to people in other parts of the country, and your success with Simplex is dependent upon your local installer, the contractor, probably the sales organization in your region. Around here, we get real good results. Other parts of the country have had some problems, and I don't think it's a reflection on the Simplex material. I think it's the people you're dealing with. There was a story here about a problem with a smoke alarm on the space shuttle, and that's listed here in the internet connections. I think you'll like that. Two on fire alarm museums. And one of these I just thought was fantastic because it's Chicago. You know, the old Leary Little Lantern in the Shed, big Chicago fire. Well, there's a fire alarm museum in Chicago. And this website takes you to pictures of antique fire alarms. Now, as a personal aside on this, a long time ago, I worked for a local university. I was a manager of HVAC automation, if that means anything to you. And I worked a lot with the police dispatcher. Now, why was it I worked with them? But anyway, I'd stop by. Oh, I think they took messages for me when I was unavailable, something like that. But I was always stopping by the police dispatcher's office. And they had this thing in the back. And I'd look at that every time I stood at the window. It had a big roll of paper tape and a little thing that looked for all the world like a telegraph sounder. And I never saw it operate, but apparently there was a spring release on the thing that dragged the paper through, and it would punch holes in the paper in a sequence based upon the code sequence that it received over the wire. What was this thing? This was their central station monitoring for pull boxes. The different pull boxes had different codes, and by reading the holes in the paper, you knew which pull box had operated. And that was in service while I was working for the university. I mean, yes, this is historic. This is a generation ago. I don't deny it at all. But this was the current technology. Not current like you'd buy a new one, but current. It was certainly in service. There's a lot of here's stuff. You'll love this. A lot of schools, by which I'm talking about Princeton University, Duke University, that kind of school, have published standards on the fire alarm system. Now, why is this amazing to me? I don't know. I mean, you kind of think government regulates everything, and for goodness sake, a large university looks an awful lot like government. But they have well thought out, well presented rules on the fire alarm system and how it's to be used. A lot of these are laboratory associated, which is real interesting to me also. Last one I'm going to mention is the National Institute of Standards and Technology, which is a division of the U.S. government. It used to be the National Bureau of Standards. They have a section on fire science. And what I mean is you go to the website and you can see all of the research that the government has funded on how things burn and how you put out the fires. And it's just amazing the breadth of research that has been done so we know what we're talking about. And I'd like to point out that has been incorporated in the 2007 code. There's a section on computational fluid dynamics. What does that mean? That means a computer tells you how smoke is going to rise from a fire. And they talk to you about they call it fuel loading. Fires are obviously different depending on what's burning. Fires are different whether it's a big room or a small room. Fires are different if it has a high ceiling or a low ceiling. But all of these are real to us. These aren't theoretical constructs. We have buildings with high ceilings. We have eight-story atriums, and I've done a couple jobs like that. What do you do for the fire alarm in this? And this stuff is addressed by the fire alarm code. There is a section on atriums. Now, we're not going to do it in this course because it's kind of a rare occurrence, but it's nice to know that it is available in the book. And again, I strongly recommend the handbook. The code is the code. That is the law. The handbook reproduces every word of the code and then follows most paragraphs with a paragraph of discussion. So that's something I have to offer you. Let's see where we stand on time. It says we should be thinking about pausing. Now, I wanted to discuss the graphic of the overall fire alarm system. This is almost a glossary because it's a visual presentation of the components that make up the system and a little bit of quick discussion on how they're mounted. Because we are using up our first 30-minute section, why don't we come back and start the next section with an oral review of the introductory graphic in the content portion of the course. So I'm going to take a break now, and I urge you to do the same.